It's time for Windows Weekly. Yeah, there's one more show in 2020. And, of course, it's Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley's predictions. Some interesting stuff ahead for Microsoft and an interesting show ahead for you next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 705, recorded Wednesday, December 30th, 2020. Married with Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, this time brought to you by our Altair 8800 computer, calculating the bits as we bring
it's
you...
It's the future.
It's the future. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Happy holidays, you two. Happy New Year.
Did you have a... on the epicenter of tech in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Did you guys have a... it's actually my Christmas gift from Burke. He built it for me. It's beautiful.
Very nice.
Did you guys have a good holiday?
Yeah, it was quiet. Nice to be off, quiet.
It was nice, yeah.
Yeah.
I spent the entire week in bed, which is, well, I think, what you should do when you get some time off. Now, I have something to share with you, and I know, Paul, you probably got yours. Mary Jo Foley, you're very crafty. She didn't go out like the rest of us did and buy Christmas cards. She made her own, and not only that, each one said something different, right? This one says, Meowie Catmas 2020, Love Mr. Murder Mittens, and it's a picture of Sriracha. And then you've glued a little Pied Piper hat onto him and a little holly necklace. That's so cute. Is this a shield or a mitten?
It's a mitten.
It's a mitten.
Come on, Leo.
I guess because...
Well, if it was for me, it would be a shield
from Sriracha.
From his murder mittens. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I get it.
With Sriracha's face mask.
This is so sweet. Yeah, he needed one. Most Christmas cards get into the recycle bin at the end of, right about now, actually. But this one's going to be a saver, a keeper forever.
That's I got a Christmas card from Ryan Reynolds this year.
Did you really?
No, not exactly. But he...
Are you a Mint Mobile customer? Owns,
yeah, so he sends out cards to everybody.
That's taking your customer service very seriously.
It is.
I don't. Where's my?
He leaves he leaves text messages on our mailbox. Like he'll be like, "Hey guys,
it's me,
it's Ryan. I'm just kind of bored today."
I tell you,
it's
actually pretty
funny.
I don't know how much of a stake he has in Mint Mobile, but whatever they did, that was a marketing.
I think he owns it.
Well,
he bought it.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
I know.
Did he buy 100% or 5%?
He's pretty active in it.
He does well, but that's the thing.
I don't know.
It's clever.
Did you get a message from Elon Musk? That would be more impressive.
Yeah. No
that guy can be screwed.
No. Although I do have my Christmas card from my lawyer. I haven't opened that yet.
Those are always uplifting.
Usually there's a bill inside.
There might have been a check.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It goes the other way. Yeah. That's nice. They did what
it's like,
we
here's
did.
A picture of the boat you guys all bought me this year. Thanks.
Yep.
They did what we
I've been
did,
quarantining on it.
Slack. Everybody, all the big companies sent out Slack Christmas cards because employees couldn't be in the same room together. So we did that too. So congrats on a stellar way to wrap up the year with that. Chris Cappicella interview was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Lots of meat in there.
Then he's always great.
He's so good.
Yep.
And then we did a best of 2020. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All that remains with our last show of the year on December 30th is a look ahead, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because who doesn't want to put this year in their rearview mirror?
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think? What should we start with here?
We could do a quick wrap-up of all the things that happened in the past 2 weeks. Just a quick
run. Did something happen?
Yeah, a couple little things.
It was like seven things, and most of them were not important. Except maybe the first one.
Actually, the first one I think is interesting. To laugh, because Microsoft has no reason in the world to be jealous of Apple. And yet...
Oh, so actually, no, I don't think that's what this is.
I know.
Me neither.
I know. And it wasn't that when they announced the Surface Hub the week after the iPad was announced. It wasn't that. I understand. It wasn't that.
No, they didn't. Leo, no one announced anything. This was a story in Bloomberg.
I understand. I'm just saying it always seems like there's this little bit of, well, Apple's doing their own chips. We ought to do our own chips.
Yeah, but Microsoft did make its own chips for its computers last year.
I know. Well,
they've already done it.
You know what?
The
reason these stories happen. No, the reason these stories happen is reporters who don't know Microsoft as much as we know them. They think Apple's doing this, so Microsoft is probably going to start doing it instead of like looking at what they've already been doing. Right.
What they're already doing.
So you knew about it, right?
Well, we knew. Yeah, they've been working on their own ARM chips for data centers. We knew that. They've been talking about that for years. 2017. I almost walked out
on the Ignite keynote because they kept talking about it. They're going on and on and on about Finn something and blah, blah, blah. I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
Anyway.
It was just to say, you know, we're always looking into chips, different chips, and how that could affect our software and our workloads and our services. Like, of course they're doing that, right? Like, if they weren't doing that, you should be worried, right? Well, and, you know, I don't know how many people at Microsoft work on silicon, but there are lots. I would guess hundreds, multiple hundreds of people work on that.
The chip they released this year was really a Qualcomm chip with Microsoft, you know, curly Qs on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that what we're talking about? One, or are we talking?
Well, that's one of them. Well, for PCs, they created a, they partnered with AMD on a custom chip for the Surface laptop. Mm-hmm. They also make their own chipsets. They do things like special chips for the Pixel devices that make the pen work better with the screen. You know, they've been doing that for a long time. I mean, I feel like, you know, everyone carts out this Alan Kay quote. You know, if you're serious about software, you have to make your own hardware, right? And the really limited view of that is you make an operating system, an application, so you have to make a device. But I think the more appropriate way to look at it is you're making the components inside the device, which is how the software becomes truly magical.
Yeah.
And that can be any number of things, you know, but Google, Microsoft, and Apple all have been doing that for years. And now Apple, of course, is taking over the, we'll call it the CPU for lack of a better term, it's really kind of an integrated, multifaceted chipset, but you know, for Macs, and
it's a big deal because Microsoft's part of the Wintel, you know, group thing, right? They're so closely associated with Intel on the desktop, anyway. That it, you know, doing what? In fact, even talked about this when Apple announced its M1 chips.
Look,
that it would be hard for Microsoft to do the same thing, only because they'd be competing with their, you know, their OEMs who were still using Intel.
I think we're still looking at this the wrong way. Like, I think we're getting a little too wrapped up in Apple's awesome.
Apple is still less than
10% of the PC market. Well, no, I mean Apple. Like, let's put this in perspective. In 1990 something, Apple switched from Motorola to the PowerPC. Right? This was a partnership with IBM, if I remember correctly, and actually Motorola and Apple, right? PowerPC. New architecture, RISC versus CISC. Apple's doing it again. They're changing everything. Microsoft's going to have to follow suit. Oh my God, Microsoft's releasing a version of Windows NT for the PowerPC processor. See? They're copying Apple again. But you know what? The PC has been x86 the whole time. The whole time. And so Apple, made this switch. It's incredible for them. But they're also 8% of the market. So of the, and from a usage standpoint, they're probably like 4% of the market. So great. But it doesn't necessarily have to impact the PC at all.
Right.
It probably will, by the way. But I mean, the PC can just continue the way it is. It still works great. The battery life's great. The performance is incredible. Compatibility, 100%. There is actually no reason to change anything. I wouldn't get too ahead of ourselves. Like, I think the future of computing is PC form factors for sure. Actually, the present is. So putting it in the Mac is good for Apple because they do make everything and it helps all their platforms work together, blah, blah, blah. I don't know that it benefits Microsoft all that much, honestly, to go to all that
I think on the server side, it's going to benefit them more, right? because
in a data center, of course. Yeah.
Right. They've talked about how ARM, when you use it inside of servers, it really makes certain kinds of workloads work better. So things like indexing and storage, big data, machine learning, all the things you want to run in the cloud. Right. So that's why they've been experimenting with ARM.
Yes, but actually, I think the bigger, I mean, yes, I should say yes. I as good, as important as that maybe is just the overall efficiency, that right. power per watt yeah. thing or whatever that they are, yep. they're always talking about. Mm-hmm. Super important. When you look at data centers and global warming and, you know, whatever, it's electrical usage, it's air conditioning, it's all that stuff that these powerful chipsets are using now are generating heat and causing electrical drain. So, yeah, ARM is a no-brainer in the data center. But that's like saying, you know, putting electrical under the ground is a, you know, is great or whatever. I mean, like, it's just, it's plumbing, you know, we're not going to see it.
So my understanding of how that Bloomberg story evolved. So we first saw the headline and everybody jumped on the PC side of it, right? Like, oh my God, Microsoft's making their own ARM chips, blah, 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 right? But then if you look at how that story evolved in the next hour, it was like maybe they're working on chips for the PC, but they're definitely working on chips for the data center. And I'm like, yeah, and we knew that since 2017, right?
So, yeah. So, right. And again, like when I wrote my article about this, what they had posted was one paragraph.
Right.
And it said, this story is developing. And the way it was written, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember, but it said something like Microsoft is developing custom ARM chips for its Surface PCs and data center.
Yeah.
And then what Mary Jo said is what happened and it changed. It's
And then Frank gave us a quote. Frank Shaw gave us a quote which said, of course we're investing in our own technologies like design and manufacturing and tools of chips and also strengthening our partnerships. Like, it's like, that's what we already said.
Yeah, that's the thing. For Microsoft, they have a rich history of partnering. That's their go-to-market strategy for virtually everything. There's no reason not to continue that in the PC market. I mean, what's the end game here? They're going to come out with some custom ARM chip and then license it to PC makers. I mean, we're still, this is still a relatively small market. You know,
you're right.
Well, they could. I mean, Apple could too, but you know, they're not going to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Why?
If anybody was going to do that, it would be Microsoft, right? Like, it wouldn't be Apple because Microsoft is like, hey, we have OEMs. We want them to make stuff that makes our services and software.
Yeah. The last thing Apple needs is for their M1 chip to be used in a PC and have the thing be faster in some way than the Mac. You know what I mean? Like, it probably wouldn't happen, honestly, but whatever. Yeah. Like, why inject that into the... Apple is not a back-end supplier of microprocessors. They're a consumer electronics company.
Yeah. The other thing that I feel like people need to kind of wrap their heads around when they're talking about Apple, Microsoft, and ARM is right now, Windows on ARM is a non-player in this, right? Like, Microsoft has a lot of work to do on the operating system before we start talking about really mass marketing Windows on ARM PCs. Like, they're way behind, even though they've been trying to fix this for years, right?
You know, people like us and people who listen to this podcast, you know, are interested in this topic, follow it. If they're Microsoft fans, they're kind of lamenting the fact that this has not gone well because it hasn't. And of course, Apple comes out and they nail it on day one because I think they did the right thing with go-to-market, right? They waited until it was ready, whereas Microsoft, frankly, did not. And then there's all the, you know, all the expected, you know, seven responses to guilt or whatever, or seven
stages of grief.
Stages of grief.
Although that we go through, and it's like seven responses to guilt.
I like that too. I'm
that's
like,
gonna be
go,
a very
go on.
Interesting.
Seven, it was like the way I described my reaction to Google's phones this year. It was like the seven stages of grief: anger, confusion, and acceptance. You know, and it's like, but like I said earlier, honestly, the truth is, look, CES is coming. There's going to be a ton of Intel and AMD announcements. There'll probably be some Qualcomm stuff, you know, for Windows PCs. Very small. And the next year is going to happen. And Intel gets its act together or it doesn't. I mean, we'll see. But I honestly, in the scope of things, I don't even know. Honestly, I don't even know that this made sense for Apple to do. It's crazy that they did it. But it's good for them. But I don't know. I just don't know if this ever happens on the PC side.
Yeah.
Well, and this is why I don't usually do shows at the end of the year, because at least not news shows, because any news that comes out between Christmas and New Year is manufactured. Right. You know, it's a reporter.
Yeah, you're just trying to find stuff to write about.
File, yeah. And so there's usually not a whole lot to talk about. This is a weird year, though, you know.
Although, did you see yesterday? This was crazy. Yesterday morning, there was a rumor out of Spain that Microsoft bought Sony. Did you see this?
Whoa.
No.
Talk about manufactured.
It went crazy. Like people were
really
tweeting to us.
We wanted cross-play. This is the only way we're going to do it.
Right.
Don't worry.
But what it turns out was, no, did you see the end result of this, Paul? Like yesterday in Spain. Oh, you didn't? It showed up in Asian social media, like, prominently, and people were asking about it all day. Like, okay. Is this true? Like, how come I don't see it on the wire? And I'm like, it's not true. And it turns out in Spain yesterday, it was something called the Day of the Innocents, which is like their April Fool's Day.
April Fool's.
And people jumped on it, and they were like, and they even had a price. I forget how many billion they said Microsoft paid for Sony. And when I first saw it in the morning, I was like, this has to be fake, right?
It's not that Microsoft couldn't afford to buy Sony by any means.
No, they could probably buy them, right?
It's like, but why?
I know. Although after TikTok this year, I was like, you know what? I can't just dismiss this out of hand.
No story is too outre these days. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that was one area where I appreciated Chris Capicella's kind of like, well, I wasn't in the room.
Yeah. Like, we talked about that on our year-end twit, which Paul, really grateful for you to be in there, because I thought Chris's response was in some ways telling. It was. I'll say what I said on that show, which was, it was him, I think, and it's hard to read too much, but between the lines I read, it was him saying, look, this was a call from the president to Satya Nadella. And Satya said, well, oh, yes, sir. And did, you know, in good faith, tried to do something. But it was never a strategic move. And by Chris admitting that the leadership team had not been consulted, it was really, I think, a way of saying,
He was trying to justify it, and I said, so why, though, would you even consider it? And he's like, video. And I'm like, video? Okay, yeah, I guess.
You know, you can give it, as he did, the blanket justification. Well, anything that's got a lot of subscribers has got community value.
Right.
I mean, if you want people, just buy the Communist Party. I mean, what are you talking about? What? The problem is, you know, mainstream media picks up. It's a huge news story. It's everywhere in the world. You and I and people like us have to waste time figuring out what TikTok is, why Microsoft might want it. We debated it.
Well, it was,
for
as
hours.
It turned out, a political story, not a tech story. Right. And it's still.
Yeah. So thanks for the waste of time on that one, guys.
Yeah, it's in limbo somewhere, right?
I can say is, having watched really way too much NFL football over the last 7 days, I don't know. Watching three games in a row an entire day is really not healthy. But TikTok.
Well, at least you're eating a lot of turkey and stuffing.
I was eating a lot of something. TikTok was jammed with ads everywhere from TikTok. Mm. And it's like, well, dudes, if you're not going to have a presence in the U.S. in about a minute, you could have fooled me. What's going on? And I think that this is just everybody's going.
It's beyond back burner now. You know, it's like the empty words of a politician. It's just gone. It's just over. You know?
It's on stage four of the seven pyramid steps.
is that the fourth of the angers?
I don't know what it is. I want to create the seven stages of guilt for Paul, just because that's a good one. So Sony is not for sale to Microsoft anyway. That would be, you know why you don't want it? There's certainly assets there that are of value.
Yeah,
but it's a big chunk to bite. That's like taking the little turkey legs. That's taking the whole turkey.
most of Sony is kind of this legacy electronics company that frankly isn't doing very well.
Well, it's an insurance business, which is the only profitable part. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, selling insurance in Japan. There's a movie company. Yeah. I don't know what Microsoft would do with that. The whole thing.
Probably still have the music. The music company.
I mean, you could say, well, they should get the PlayStation 5. Yeah, but that's not what just
I know.
Get the PlayStation 5.
No, it was like Yahoo.
They want two
Remember
consoles
Yahoo?
That compete with
No, when they almost bought Yahoo like 10 years ago, there was like a little chunk of Yahoo that kind of made sense for Microsoft. And the rest of it, were like, what?
And that's that's very different, right?
The Those sigh of relief when they didn't get it. When they went,
Of course. That would have been an albatross.
Yeah.
A dead weight, you know. But there were people in Microsoft working, and a Yahoo, I assume, to figure out, you know, what wins where and what takes over where. And they were going to do that, you know. That's one thing. Sony and Microsoft literally just released new console generations. These are completely, they're probably not completely, they're actually probably very similar internally. But, I mean, they're completely different consoles, different software bases, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, no company would want to sell. I mean, like McDonald's selling Whoppers or something like that doesn't make any sense.
So there is a precedent for that. When they bought all those different ERP companies, they bought like four or five ERP companies. Okay. And everybody was like, wait, why do they keep buying ERP companies? They already have two and now they have three. Right. And so everybody's like, why do they want all these competing ERP products? Like there's overlap in a lot of them. Right. And then I also would point out, in March 2020, there was that weird agreement with Microsoft and Sony about game streaming, right? And it was very kind of like, Sony's going to use Azure as its back-end platform. So that's another thing that yesterday made me think, maybe this isn't Microsoft buying Sony. Well, maybe it's more about that game streaming agreement, right?
So actually, we should hold on that thought for a moment, because that right there is everything you need to know about Microsoft in a nutshell. Sony is the the current market leader in games.
Yeah, right.
And they're partnering. They're not fighting them, I guess, in a way. But they're partnering with them, right, in a way that I think most people would agree makes sense. Although some people probably think we shouldn't try to help Sony. I'm sure that's the way that they think of it. But that's Microsoft's mindset. And also a very clear understanding of where the future of their business is and what's important and what isn't important, right?
Yep.
And, you know, when you think back to that discussion about Apple and M1 and doing their own thing and whether Microsoft would ever copy them or do the same thing. I mean, they probably aren't going to continue co-developing CPUs for Surface devices, blah, 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 whatever. But, I mean, at the end of the day, even that is a partnership. I mean, that's their mindset. That's that's who they are, you know, who it is or whatever.
Who they are now, right?
Well, they've always been a partnering company. I mean,
all I can say is
although
happy.
Although under Ballmer.
Dia de los Inocentes. I got you.
It went pretty far. Authentic. Like, it did. Like, if you go look at Twitter, IB Times, I think,
I never
had to
even
refute
saw this.
It.
Is there some... Someday in the future, when we can just ignore Twitter, like, and forget anything you see on Twitter?
This is the dream. And while we're sitting here making our resolutions for 2021, let us consider social media, shall we?
Oh, I'm done. I am so done.
Hey, guys, there's a lot of bad on social media, but I'm telling you, there's a lot of good. Like, when you want to know when there's an outage, when you want to know why people are mad about something, you know, infuriated about a licensing question, just turn to Twitter. You'll get the full spectrum right there.
Yeah.
I don't want the full spectrum.
And then some.
And then some. Right. And then
there's some bleeding on the spectrum.
Yeah, that's no paper cut.
Right.
All right. What else happened? I mean, we haven't even gotten to story two.
We're not even up to predictions yet.
So we should blow through most of this. Most of this is not super important.
Yep.
As you know, AdDuplex does their hello. why are we working this week, Leo? Their monthly Windows 10 usage stats. I know. The three most recent versions of Windows 10 together combined for 65 or almost 70% of all of Windows 10, which is great, which is what we want, right? So latest version is up to 13.6%. It's going better, I believe, than any of the previous four versions. Version 2004, the one that came out in the beginning of this year, 40.4 in the first place, and 1909, the one from a year ago, up to 33.2%. The only super interesting little point here to me is that all three of those versions, all three of them, saw usage gains this month, meaning that to the exception of older versions of Windows. My son very coincidentally brought back a gaming PC that we had built 4 years ago. We took it apart, cleaned it, put it back together, brought it up. It was on 1809. And I was like, wow. I said, you know, I don't know if you're going to get the latest version, but I'm really curious to see what happens when you run Windows 8 update. He got 20H2.
Oh, wow.
To 20. He went from 1809 to 20H2. Right. So it seems like it's going pretty well. Right. Sorry, there's more stories. there was a bunch of antitrust stuff. I only put through one in here, and just because this is crazy. And this is, you know, this is what's nice about not having one company as the monopoly lording over itself. You get to these other monopolies that conclude together to be, what do you call them, biopolies? Duopolies. Biopolies. Right? So biopolies. I don't know. Google and Facebook were found by the Wall Street Journal through a redacted version of an agreement that was part of the lawsuit that I think against Google from the DOJ to have colluded to control the online advertising business, which is awesome. So I can't wait for those two losers to go to court. That will be fun. Facebook took out those crazy full-page ads against Apple, which is hilarious because full-page newspaper ads, who even sees those these days? Apple responded, and their response was priceless. They responded officially with an official statement, but they also responded via Tim Cook, who had a neat little thing on Twitter that I thought was kind of fun. But basically, the gist of it is this feature change in iOS 14 point whatever it is, that Facebook is so up in a huff about, does not require Facebook to do anything. All it's doing is giving users a choice. Some of them may choose to let Facebook track them. In fact, I bet a bunch of them probably will. But, you know, Facebook, so whatever. What else we got here? A bunch of stuff for M1 Max. Microsoft Edge is available natively, I think, in the dev channel, maybe. And Adobe Premiere Pro joined the ranks. It is interesting to me that we as Windows users have benefited from M1 in some ways because Adobe Premiere Pro might not be on this list. Lightroom and Photoshop are both available in native ARM versions now. So the six people who have Windows 10 and ARM, good for you guys. And Mary Jo, I think this one might be.
Yeah. Together mode, you know, that weird viewing option that's in Teams where you can look like you're in a coffee shop with people or in a stadium and you see everybody's heads.
A thousand times on the NFL.
Oh, yeah, on sports, right?
Oh, yep. My God. But you know what?
I know.
Yeah. A little bit weird. I'm surprised no one said
that.
Because the song they used at the end, it sounds like they're saying zoom, zoom, zoom.
Oh, man.
And I thought, you know, this is Teams, right?
Not the best choice. Yeah.
Somewhere there's a guy out in a giant empty field doing a slow clap for Microsoft marketing.
There is. Oh,
just like, yes.
You know, yeah.
It's probably
let's
not
name
zoom,
drop
zoom,
the market
zoom,
leader.
But it sounds like it.
It sounded like it.
Yeah.
Like those old Volkswagen ads. Wasn't it Volkswagen? Oh, no, Mazda ads that had zoom, zoom.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's some other phrase, but, you know, would have been maybe better to pick. I don't know. Let me play you.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I'm going to play it for you just real quick.
Okay.
Just you tell me. Maybe it's just me.
Okay.
It's probably not just you.
No. And also, the only reason we're even bringing this up is now Together Mode is in Skype.
You might as well. Because that's the thing that pays off, by the way, the ad. They have, let me see if I can find it here. They all end up in the Teams mode.
Great. Right?
Yeah, you heard this. Everybody heard this over and over.
It's about time you know I'm good and ready.
It's about time you know I'm good and ready.
The good vibes will come on and blow my mind.
Something about blowing my mind.
You gotta wait for it, go ahead, drop the confetti.
You gotta wait and get some confetti.
Don't clean it, bone.
Now, ready?
We're gonna do what I do, 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 do.
We're gonna
it's do what I do, do.
Oh, not zoom, zoom, zoom?
But it sounds like Zoom.
I appreciate
now, remember,
why
I'm
they
feverish
did that.
Lying on the couch.
Right.
And I'm thinking, what am I seeing?
Right.
Why is Microsoft advertising Zoom?
Zoom, zoom, zoom. So teens.
Wait, did they buy them?
Yeah, maybe. Check with Spain.
Actually, somebody's saying they're saying Zune, Zune, Zune. So that
that's
would
it. Brown Zune, yeah. Zune, Zune.
Brown Zune, Zune, Zune.
All right. Okay. Zune's coming back, baby. You heard it here first.
It is.
Anyway.
That's our prediction. 2021. We're done.
It is one of the signature features now, isn't
Peak
it?
Peak Microsoft of 2005 and the original Zune.
Of Teams is this new, you know, that team.
Together mode.
Together mode, yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. Does it do what it did in the TV ad where they all kind of go from a grid to whoosh into their seats?
Yeah, they're all.
I don't know if they actually animate.
They don't animate.
Right.
That?
I don't know.
It just switches.
No, I don't know if they do.
Because that's a cool thing if that did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about the animation, but some people who use the together mode really like it. I haven't had had a chance to use it. I think it looks weird, but.
Well, you'd only use it if
it reminds me of
the
NBA games last season.
Yeah, they really used it. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, some meetings use it so that you can see everybody like they're in a room together.
I like that. I've been in even my small companies had meetings with enough people where it's like, well, isn't there a way to show everyone at once? By the way, there is. Mm-hmm. But you know, by default, it will only show like the four or five most recent people.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, sorry, that was
so
just my
Mary Jo, you must have gotten the feedback, but I thought Microsoft was killing Skype. Why would they be adding features to Skype, Mary Jo? You lied to us.
I'm just guessing. I'm the one who keeps saying, guys, they're not killing Skype. Right. I know we all think they're going to kill it, but even Chris Kapp said.
But you said.
No, remember Chris Kapp said. Yeah. He said, well, even as we move Teams forward. It's Skype that's the underpinning for Teams. He actually said that, right? Like the underpinning, underlying infrastructure. So, yeah, I don't think in the foreseeable future that's going anywhere.
Okay. Well, given that they're using the same underlying technology, it is probably reasonably easy to add features from Teams to Skype and vice versa. That makes sense. And this is one of the ones that maybe made sense.
Maybe.
But I can't. But you said. No,
that's so mean.
I got that.
Hey, we're going to get into the seven stages of guilt now.
Seven stages of guilt. Jeez.
Have either of you tried Flight Sim in VR? Because that sounds pretty cool.
That does sound.
No, cool. Although it would require VR hardware, which I'd. Well, actually, maybe I still have one VR headset, but no.
I wouldn't mind trying it. Quest 2 if I didn't have to have a Facebook account to use it.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I was going to be testing that HP Reverb, but I haven't gotten it, so I don't know.
Who's working on Oculus?
Gabe All works on
I
believe, who used to run the Windows Insider program and then went to work on Oculus. Ask Gabe. Better call Gabe.
All. Better call all.
Better call all.
That's good.
All right. Now, normally at the end of the show, we would have Paul reminding us that it is Games with Gold time as a new month approaches. But you want to do that at the beginning?
Yeah, they released this early. They announced this before Christmas. Probably because they were anticipating not being in the office for the final week and a half there. But kind of a weird one. Dead Rising is an excellent game. That's one of the games,
which is
an Xbox One game.
Yeah.
But the other two games is like an Xbox 360 game that I've never even heard of, and then an original Xbox game. So I think we're kind of scraping the bottom here a little bit.
Maybe there's the end. Little Nightmares, Dead Rising, The King of Fighters 13, and Breakdown.
Yeah, that's the one I've not even heard of. But apparently there were 13 of them.
Utilize your hyperdrive power gauge to let loose devastating
Star Wars was
strikes.
A little long-winded.
Whew. You can't even on the box. It's such a weird title. I can't even read it on the. I don't know.
Right.
What is that?
Is that a new XXX movie? What is that?
Yeah. And Breakdown. Trapped inside a mysterious lab and unable to remember his past, Paul Theroux must fight his way out. Yeah. Using his newfound extraordinary
powers. But this is an OG Xbox game, so this thing could literally be, 18 years old.
And do they update the graphics or anything? Or?
No, they're just backward compatible games, just guarantee that they run, but there are things in the Xbox One and now in the Xbox Series X and S that
upscale and stuff.
Make them better in some way, right? Either faster performance or whatever.
It's from Namco, so it's got to be good.
It's from, right. It's an arcade port from Namco. Didn't Namco, did they make Pac-Man?
Yeah, it, I mean, I think they are the one of the arcade companies. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, now you can feel secure. You haven't missed anything.
Exactly.
That is the
You're
news.
Up to
and
date.
You can understand why we didn't do a show last week.
Yeah.
Yep. Wasn't a lot to say.
But we had always planned when we did this show to talk about the future. And Mary Jo does a column every year on this. Paul, do you do a predictions column too?
No, I'm terrible at predictions.
I am too.
I'm terrible too. But I still do it anyway.
Also, by the way, I found that if you don't make predictions, you lessen the instances where someone points their finger in your face and says,
but
you said.
You said Skype was dying, Mary Jo Foley.
Yeah. Skype is dying, Mary Jo Foley.
All I'll say is I did my predictions column, posted it today, and Chris Kapp said, good column. And somebody said, are there any hidden gems? And he said, my item number one is a hidden gem.
Oh.
Well, talk to us. What was your item number one?
My item number one was something Microsoft has not publicly talked about called Meta OS.
Mm-hmm.
And Meta OS has to do with Fluid Framework. It has to do with cross-platform. It's basically Microsoft's way of having a platform for apps and services that can work on any device anywhere. And they're trying to make that more of a like a foundational layer so that developers can work with that. And Fluid Framework, you know, that fast co-authoring and object embedding technology they announced a couple of years ago, that is key to whatever is going on here. So I bet in 2021, we're going to hear a lot more about Fluid Framework. And we're going to hear about how it's changing the way that Microsoft's designing apps and how they want third parties to design apps. That's a prediction.
Very
and a hidden gem.
That will be like we've got a second Ignite that no one has ever talked about ever again. Right?
It's going to be in March, be right? Isn't it?
Okay. Oh, it's March? Okay.
Well, so I don't think they've said,
the first time we'll...
Oh, okay. That's a good question.
But between Ignite and Build in the first half of the year.
Right. Yep.
That would be a reasonable time frame for something.
It would.
Like this.
Build would be a great time to talk about this, I would think.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But
well,
I think I don't know if they'll ever announce the word Meta OS, like if they'll call it that publicly, or if they'll just keep talking about Fluid Framework and cross platform kind of stuff.
It's likely that's not going to be the name that is public.
Right.
Right. So, you said, either part of Fluid Framework or maybe some new name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was my top thing on my predictions list that we're going to hear a lot more about that in 2021. And now that Chris Kapp gave me a little hidden gem kudo or badge, I feel good about it.
Nice.
But we should start with Windows if we're going to do our predictions, right? Okay. Since this is Windows Weekly, we should talk Windows.
Mm-hmm.
One would think. So I feel like some of these we've talked a lot about in the past year, but we should just revisit them now to see how wrong or right we are in the coming year. Like Windows 10, are we thinking there will be a 21H1 release? Because as of today, we still have no guidance on this.
I bet we see one, but I bet it's just a cumulative update. And the point of it literally is just for that kind of roll up. Hot fix roll up thing. But yeah, I don't.
So can they?
It's possible.
Can they do a hot? Can they do a cumulative update to a cumulative update? Like, is there any reason they can't?
Because
do that?
Yeah, I mean, you think about the definition of cumulative update, right? It's cumulative. So yeah,
right,
of course.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. So since 20H2 was a cumulative update to 20H1, now we're thinking as another cumulative update.
Yeah, I mean,
which would be unusual because that's not the way they've been doing it.
Well, it's never happened before, but
right.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. We live in a brand new world, Mary Jo.
I know.
It doesn't have to have happened before. Nothing happened before anymore.
That's true.
When it comes to Windows. So we are literally, like I said a couple weeks ago, in a state where no one is testing outside of Microsoft any next version of Windows 10 right now. It's very strange. And so, yes, I do, like, to answer your question, yes, I think There will be a 21H1, and I think it will be just a cumulative update and potentially with literally no new features. There'll probably be a couple little
things, small things, right?
UI changes.
Then we do think 21H2 will be a much bigger and more substantial update, which is the opposite of how Microsoft's been doing it up to this point. They've always made it the big update was spring and the smaller update was fall. So it sounds like next year they may flip that on its head. Although, again, they still haven't said that or announced it or acknowledged it anywhere.
We should add, from a prediction standpoint, there's also like a wish list kind of a thing or an expectation. Right. It's not so much a prediction, but something we sort of hope or think should happen. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think in sometime in the next 6 months, we're going to get information from Microsoft about this very thing, that the thing we complained to Chris Kapp a little bit about. Mm-hmm. What's going on with the roadmap? Like, what is the plan?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I hope that happens.
I think that would be good. I do. I think they should do that. My one fear about that is Panos loves secrecy, and Panos is in charge of a big part of Windows now. So he may be like, nope, we're not talking about roadmap. Sorry, guys, you just have to wait and see. So that could happen. But we do think 21H2 in the fall of next year is the big update. And that's where this codename Sun Valley comes in that we kept trying to get Chris Kapp to talk about, and he wouldn't. That's supposed to be the UI revamp on Windows 10, 21H2, which will supposedly make everything look really nice and fix a lot of the inconsistencies and things that people like Paul notice, you know, like people me, like Paul. Not so much.
People who are in the middle of the seven steps of anger or whatever it was.
I saw somebody posted a conceptual video, and I think it was Zach Bowden from Windows Central, and he said, wouldn't it be nice if Windows 10 looked like this? And I looked at it, and I'm like, doesn't it look like this already?
Yeah, right.
I don't really see those changes, but I know many people, this drives them crazy, like if there isn't a rounded corner here or a fluent something or other there.
Well, we won't bore you with these 17 different pop-up menu styles that are available now in Windows 10.
Exactly.
I will say, whatever happens, if they're going to do some kind of a UX refresh or whatever, honestly, doing it in the second half of the year is kind of an interesting target because
it is.
They will, by nature, miss the back-to-school and the holiday season, right? I mean, that's the only thing that's kind of weird about it.
I know. It is. Unless they also change the time they roll it out. And maybe when they move up the rollout. Because why can't they roll out 21H1 now? Like, it's done, right? Like, why do they? We have to wait till spring. Why couldn't they do it in March?
You could also,
or February.
You could argue that H2 is July 1st or later. So put it out in August. Right. You know. Mm.
Yeah.
We'll see. This is the type of clarity we're asking for.
Exactly. And then there's 10X, which another one. No one outside of Microsoft, as far as we know, is publicly testing this. Only internally they're testing it. And that's the version of Windows 10 that looks kind of like Android, right? It's got a simpler UI. It supposedly is going to be easier to manage, easier to update, more secure, blah, blah, blah. All the things you want in an operating system. And we know because Microsoft has acknowledged...
Well, not all the things, Mary Jo.
Why?
It's not going to run Windows apps. Right? Well, I mean, this is kind of the...
A minor detail. No 132 support. First version, which they haven't... I don't think they've said that publicly, but we know because we've seen and heard things. That's true.
Is that true?
They never said it. No, they never said that. Nope. So what we think is going to happen is in the spring at some point, 10X will roll out. But the way it'll roll out is it'll be preloaded on some new devices from third-party OEMs. It'll never be available for people who have existing devices to put on their PC.
Right, right. It's not an upgrade.
It's not.
Yeah, and the story is that a future version will add that Win32 container support.
Right.
You know, and then
like a year from now.
Oh, and it will be more of a consumer type release at that point, maybe.
Yes.
So we'll see. Assuming this is true, again, I hate doing this all the time, but you always kind of point to this future milestone. And for this type of thing, it would be CES. And
for 10X, you think?
It'd be the first time it could happen, right? So I guess what I'll say,
I'm going to throw cold water on you on this.
Oh, no. Well, let me do it. I'm going to do it to myself. I have been briefed on all of the major PC announcements that are coming at CES, and there was nothing about Windows 10X.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so because
confidence to say that.
But no, you know why I wouldn't think so? Because it's supposed to be the first iteration, education and first line workers. That's not the audience for CES, right?
Yeah, but that's not so. You're right, but CES is not strictly a consumer event for PC makers, despite the name, right? So. Yeah, PC makers use CES to announce the devices for the first half of the year, and then they use IFA in September for the end of the year. But you're right. If this thing is going to go commercial, when's the BET?
That's in January, usually, isn't it? January or February.
Is it also January? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it seems like. There's no reason companies do announce PCs that aren't shipping for months down the road at CES.
That's true. Yeah,
so it's possible. True. And I could imagine them keeping this a secret because it would be big news, you know,
right?
And they don't want it to leak out ahead of time.
Yeah.
But, like I said, I don't think I'm violating a confidence to say I've not heard anything about anything 10X. Mm. Mm.
How could that be violating a confidence?
Well, because I have agreed to non-disclosure agreements.
Right, he's under NDA.
But I haven't heard anything. Even so,
that's what I'm saying. It's a gray area. But is Lenovo going to release a new ThinkPad? I think I can't say anything about that.
That's interesting.
Obviously.
Right. You know, does an NDA cover things that aren't gonna
that
happen.
Aren't being announced. I know. Yeah. It is a gray area. That is a gray
is it?
Area.
Right? I'm going to predict. I mean, Microsoft will not ship flying cars this year. But
are you under NDA?
If you stand up in a crowded theater and you yell, there probably isn't a fire. I don't know. Is that a problem? I don't know.
No, also, I also think you don't know every announcement for CES. You may be under embargo on a lot of them, but you don't know every one.
Oh, that's right. Right. Absolutely right. Yeah. But right. I'm just saying, it's, you know, imagine it's like Lenovo and HP and Dell or something, and they're all going to release one of these things. Did Microsoft get the three of them to agree not to discuss this with people ahead of time? I could imagine that. Sure.
Or is it going to be more like smaller, like not brand name Asian vendors making them for the education?
By the way, if it is, let's just write the obituary right now. Then you know, it's like MSI announces the first Windows 10X.
Right.
Yikes.
Right. You know, like, because that's who makes a lot of education PCs, right? So that they stay a lot less pricey than Dell, HP, and Lenovo. I mean, so maybe. Maybe. Maybe.
Let's just say we're thinking about it. We're looking forward to hearing what
they have to say. What is CES going to look like to you guys this year?
I know.
It's going to look a lot like this podcast. We're going to be sitting in our offices.
It's going to be on Teams, right?
So there'll be a lot of briefings via Teams.
I did a virtual PepCon event or Showstopper or something like that. I think there was time to probably IFA last year, so September.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little goofy. Remember when you used to get these CD-ROMs for the computer when they first came out? They had these menu systems. You'd go in and out, out. You know, it was like that.
So there'll be like, here's a the lobby, company. And then you can see in the lobby, will it be a recorded message when you click that button, or will somebody be in a gray room? Go, hi, Paul. I mean, what's that going to be?
It's literally exactly like that. It was a little different for each company. So if you ever go, no, it's not live. So if you go into a Showstopper event before CES or whatever, it's a big ballroom. There's tables all around.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And if there were 100 companies back in the day, 100 of them would be small companies. These days, 90 of them are small companies. And then like HP's there and Microsoft's there. And there's a couple of big companies. They figured out that these are good things to go to. But you have, you know, now you have them in a list. And so it's like, let's make one up, like Sonos or something. And you go, someone from Sonos will, you know, a video of some guy talking about what they're announcing at the show. And then there's like, you can dive into each product. You can get assets, press spec sheets and photos and things. And then there's a link if you want to talk to a person and maybe get set up with a review unit or something. All that's there. So it's a lot like, it is a lot like the real event in that you can look through this crowded room and say, I'm going to skip this and this, and I'm going to go to those guys. The only thing different is I don't get free drinks. which is terrible. This, and
is this efficient though? Couldn't I mean, if wouldn't you prefer just getting a press? I mean, a text-based press release you could scan.
Yes.
I think the reason they do this is they're trying to maintain some sense of continuity.
Right.
So, so that when in-person events happen again, PepCon or Showstoppers or CES itself has never stopped. Right. You know, it's also still a yearly thing. It's, you know,
once you realize that a press release is adequate, it means no one will ever do CES again.
This is one of the big takeaways to this year, I think. The realization that things like going to an office for a lot of people are not essential, at least not every single day. Yeah. Or a lot of business travel, frankly, is not necessarily essential. And it's tough, you know, for people like us who rely on these things, you know, that it can be a little alarming, you know. But I think companies are going to save money and maybe spend money in ways that are better for the company, you know, than they did in the past. I think we got stuck in this system for a long time. You know, hopefully there'll be some positive changes.
I guess it makes sense that they would want to try to do some continuity, hoping that their business model would work again someday.
Look, I'm happy to sit here for 10 minutes and see who's there, and I'll look at a couple of them, you know, but
I have so little interest in doing that. I mean,
I know. It's hard to pay attention when you played
Myst for the first time and it was kind of fun. At this point,
I'd be thrilled to go to a hotel ballroom in Las Vegas. I'd be so happy.
My wife and I were in a hotel in September when we drove my daughter to school. And we were in the entire first floor of this hotel that you could see. It was huge. It was just me and my wife eating out of to-go containers in an empty, gigantic kitchen, And it was like, it's like post-apocalyptic. What's going on in here?
Yeah.
It's like, can I get us some salt?
You know, like it welcome was like, to the Shining.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. I mean,
I know.
It's interesting. They're gonna try to do it. So, and it sounds like a lot of companies are gonna do their briefings this way. So,
you know, with the anticipation that next year, hopefully,
we'll be
back.
Great.
Yeah. Okay. Windows 10X. We'll see.
Yeah. So we did 10X. Talk about Windows on ARM. Hopefully, there'll be continued progress on that. We had a little blip of upbeat news right before the end of December, right? X64 emulation is improving.
Yeah, that's huge. And that one thing, and I you know, powered up this machine I never used because it's terrible, updated it, you know, got on the insider preview just to try it, and it's great in the sense that it actually works, right? It's a little slow, but everything on the Windows 10 is slow. That was a major shot in the arm. And it really turned around things, I think, for this system, with the understanding that all the usual problems are still there, right? So the little down note was roughly that same time frame is when Qualcomm has their annual event where they announce the new Snapdragon processors. And they did that virtually, of course. They didn't say anything about a PC chip. There was no announcement of an 8CX successor. Mm-hmm. And someone asked Qualcomm or someone from Qualcomm about that, and they said, stay tuned, you know, there's something to announce. And so it's possible, again, we're going to punt this to CES, but I think we're going to hear more about hardware at CES and beyond sometime in early 2021. And that's going to be key for the coming year because, like, the 888, which is the Snapdragon processor for phones, seems like it's a significant advance, and it holds up well against the whatever the Apple thing is now, M14 or wherever they're at. And we need that on the PC side. And I think it's fair to say we're not going to get it, right? It's not going to be that good, but we need something better than what we have now. And we're not exactly at make or break, but, you know, this is a platform I think that's been kind of floundering. So hopefully we'll get some good news there.
I think that's why there was so much interest in this idea of Microsoft doing its own chips is because...
Yeah.
If you're going to do Windows on ARM, it better be something better than the Qualcomm off-the-shelf chips.
You know what, though? But that's the thing. So this is the problem. They make the first generation of chips. It's literally the exact same processor they used in phones. So the first gen was, remember, an 835. And, wow, was that terrible, right? I mean, incredible technical achievement that it works at all, but the performance was terrible, especially in emulated code. Next gen was an 850, which was just a slightly modified, I think 845 or something, whatever the chip number was. Same thing, terrible. And then finally, through their partnership, Microsoft and Qualcomm, you know, changed the chips to be better for emulating x86 code. But what happens is the performance is still pretty terrible. It's a little bit better. The battery life is significantly less. It's still really good for a PC. Like, so they went from 22 hours down to about 15, right? By the time we get to the Pro X, that Microsoft thing, the SQ1, now they're like, well, 12 hours, you know, maybe 15. But it's real world, it's probably 6 or 8, you know, which is still good. But you have to kind of wonder, as you keep tailoring this thing to run x86 code better, don't you, I mean, is it possible we're just going to end up with an x86 chip, right? It's going to be terrible battery life, better performance, you know, but you're still going to have some of the compatibility issues that kind of dog arm in the PC space. So this is the trick. I mean, this is why I'm really curious to see what the Qualcomm and Microsoft come up with on the hardware side. Okay. Is that a prediction? I don't know.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, then on kind of like a parallel track, we've got the rumor about Project Latte, the Android apps running on Windows 10 through an Android subsystem, kind of like the Windows subsystem for Linux. And I'm pretty sure this is a real effort after having written about this and talked to people about this. Like, it's something they're seriously pursuing, although I don't know if it'll be this year or later. I mean, this coming year or later. But it seems to me like there's two reasons they're doing this. One is because it's a Chromebook Compete thing. And since Chromebooks are able to run Android apps, so should Windows equivalent to Chromebooks. But also, if you guys remember, I did a questionnaire for people and said, what apps do you want to have, Android apps you want to have on your Windows machines? And a lot of people had a laundry list of things they wanted and not to have to use through BlueStacks or another emulation kind of technique. So
right.
It sounds like this could happen. I'm still kind of a little puzzled about how, when, why, and is it because your phone is still such a clunky and hard to use experience for many people? Like, that's not really working optimally. Lately, I've been using Google Messages on my PC versus your phone, and Google Messages is a million times better. It just works.
Yeah, it is. So, that's right. Yeah. The web app. Yep.
Yeah.
So there are two questions here. One is how, and we've discussed this before, because obviously what you really need is like the Play Store on Windows, and we're not going to see that. I don't think anyone expects that. So how we get Android apps on Windows is a curious problem, and we'll see how they solve that. Yeah. The other one is these other versions of Windows we just talked about. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't the ability to run Android apps make even more sense on something like Windows 10X or Windows 10 on ARM, right, where they might run a little bit better?
And both of those are Chromebook Compete, right? So that makes a lot of sense that it could be on those.
And it would solve the app problem on Windows 10X in particular. You know, when you say, well, it doesn't run Windows apps. Well, it runs Android apps. I mean, so, you know, there's there's an Android version of Word that may in some ways be better than the web version or whatever.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll see on that one. I think that one's a little like maybe towards the end of 2021 or later. Yeah. So we may have to wait a bit to see that.
I feel like if they're going to do this sooner is better.
I think it should show up in 21H2, right? If they're going to do that. Yeah. That seems like a more realistic time frame. But I don't know. I don't have a lot of firsthand on that. Windows Central has been doing a lot of the work getting good info on that. Okay, and then yet another effort that's in parallel to all these things is the Cloud PC service, which is Microsoft's desktop as a service. That, I keep hearing, is on track for spring 2021. And this is the virtualization service that's going to let you run your Windows apps in the cloud for a flat fee. That's the key, is the flat fee part. Like Windows Virtual Desktop, you pay for consumption there, but Cloud PC is going to be something you pay a flat price and you get to run your apps on your PC through virtualization in the cloud, basically, right? So Microsoft, again, has not publicly acknowledged that this exists, although they have told partners about it, I hear. I'm not violating NDA on there.
There's been a lot of information about it. Yeah.
There has. There has. And Walking Cats found like the actual website for Cloud PC, which I just, I took the bull by the horns and I pinged the website directly and said, can I get in? And they said, no.
Oh, how they laugh.
And you would be, they probably wanted her to wear a collared shirt, right, Paul?
Exactly. Yeah. That must have been.
Guys, you're never going to believe who just signed up for this thing.
And as soon as I did that, they pulled the site offline or hid it, too.
So oh, really?
Yes, that was the end of that.
Holy cow. Wow.
I'm like, and so, that's the end of that.
We've been busted. Get out. Get out.
You know, having tested some game streaming services recently, I got to say, I mean, at least for me, and, I realize I don't live in, the middle of Montana or something, but a cloud PC type solution could really work. And this could solve the problem for 10X and Windows 10 on ARM, I guess. It's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
You know, even for individuals. I would be excited about it.
No, yeah. I would be super excited about this because for me, this was like, I have such few needs app-wise. I don't need to be running stuff locally. I put all my notes in the cloud.
Yeah, so every once in a while, maybe you need something and you could just go access it and be done with it.
Yeah. Yep.
It's interesting. Yeah,
I know. I'm very interested in Cloud PC. And if you hear anything about it, it's codenamed Deschutes. It's out there.
It also would make it easier for people to switch platforms, right? So if you want to go to the Mac, which is obviously a very mainstream platform, or Linux, the availability of Cloud PC is kind of a first-class Microsoft-hosted service. You know, it's a lot easier to use a non-PC device, a non-Windows device.
No, I love the idea. I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Except
I've only heard about it on Windows. Yeah. I know. So far, I've only heard about it running in emulation on Windows, especially for cases like 10X, where your Win32 isn't going to be available right away. But it's got to be cross-platform. Everything from Microsoft is cross-platform, right?
Yeah.
And then a quick shout-out to Windows Server, all our Windows Server fans out there. We already know this was a weird thing for them to acknowledge, but they have said publicly the vNext preview build that people have been testing in Windows Server is the release that's coming out in the second half of next year. It's the long-term servicing channel release of Windows Server. So we know that is coming out towards the end of next year and that people are already testing that. And it's not the last version of Windows Server. I've seen people say, is this the last one? No, they're going to keep making Windows Server.
We're going to ask every time with this in office.
I know. Yeah.
It's
you know what? People want to run stuff on-prem still, and Microsoft's happy to sell you the ability to do that.
Remember, I'm going to have a hard time remembering this exactly. Like Server Core, I guess it was, had very specific workloads that you could configure it for. And I feel like Windows Server, as a mainstream product, has headed just in that direction. That they're kind of cutting down, they're targeting key
work scenarios.
What are most of our customers using this thing with? They're really orienting it not to a general purpose server, but rather something that could be configured for one of seven major workloads or something.
They're definitely trying to make it to.
Right now, but.
No, you're right. I feel like you're right. I mean, the Server Core and. Server Core thing didn't work out so well for them, but I think they are kind of thinking there are scenarios that people need and want this, and there are customers who tell us they need it because they have to run this and this on-prem, and so let's make it optimized for those cases, right? I think you're right about that.
I think so. Yep. I don't spend a lot of time with Server, obviously, but
we could change that in 2021.
Yeah, why aren't you running Server? I mean, my God.
Why not, Paul? You've got the house. You could have a data center in there. You could.
I used to have rack-mounted servers in my house, Mary Jo.
Did you really?
So you could do it again.
Yeah. Oh, it was a jet engine in there.
And what did you
do?
It was a Microsoft. Let me see if I can remember what this was. It was a storage server of some kind. And at the time, it had some ungodly amount of storage for the day, like a terabyte, but it was like huge hard drives, multiple power supplies to this one rack, part of the rack. And when you turn this thing on, it was like the lights dimmed a little bit and it generated so much heat.
Oh man. Yep.
Yeah.
It the was cats like would like it.
Furnace. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. No, the cats would have killed that thing. Their hair would have been flying everywhere in the room from the fans.
Yep. Yeah, so I think that's everything on Windows. Windows predictions, I think that's our... There's quite a few.
Yeah.
And actually, you know what? There's a lot going on in Windows right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there really is. And yes, even though we don't know the roadmap and it's a little frustrating,
yeah.
we're leaving a year where Microsoft, for the first time, released two very minor updates to Windows 10, feature updates, one of which was literally a feature update, but really there wasn't too much to it. And then the H2 release, which was even less to it. And seriously, I kind of celebrate that because at this point, when Microsoft adds stuff to Windows, it feels like it's just getting in the way. Like I think we all have established patterns and we're used to the product and we're not really looking for new stuff. Consistency would be nice from a UX perspective, for me at least. I don't mind them modernizing the look of it. That's fine. I like what Apple did with Mac OS X Big Sur. I know some people don't, but as far as like, hey, here's the new feature, you know, explosion of like, you know, stuff. You're just in the way.
I agree. Well, then you're going to like Sun Valley if those predictions are correct, because that's like fit and finish and like making everything look more consistent.
This is the dream.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Let's see if the rumors are right on Sun Valley.
Yep.
So let's do predictions on hardware, because that's always fun.
Yeah.
How wrong can we be? So,
well, you'd be surprised.
I know. We can be very wrong. So I think there will be a Surface Duo 2 next year running Android, I should say, because I've had people ask me, oh, the one that's going to run Windows? No, there isn't one that's going to run Windows.
Oh, guys, come on.
I know. Come on. Give up the Windows Phone ghost, right? I know.
Yeah.
Probably Android, probably latter half of next year. Probably a very minor update, I would guess, the way Surface does things to the first Duo. Hopefully less buggy. Yeah.
You know, I got to say, I understand why Microsoft's moved slowly on form factor changes with Surface. Like, I get it. Even Apple, which sells so many more computers, does the same thing. I mean, so there's some precedent for it. But Surface Duo is a device that's flawed enough. I feel like they need to be a little more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to retain this folding system with two separate screens.
Which it sounds like are from Chris.
Shrink the bezel, please. You know, maybe make it as the most minimal imaginable bezel at the crease so that when you use it as a single screen, it, you know, makes sense in landscape mode.
Looks like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I said when I did my review of the Duo 1, I thought the hardware was okay. The part that was very buggy for me was the gestures and the whole way you had to like manipulate apps to get them to span across the screens, and then even finding use cases for the two apps side by side. I know they say they have a whole laundry list of things that they've figured out belong next to each other, but I couldn't really come up with anything that made sense for me to do that way.
And yet, so, I'd probably buy Duo 2.
You would?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I returned mine.
Leo has drunk the Duo Kool-Aid. The Duo-Aid.
I don't know. I mean, I'll look at it for sure. I wouldn't say, I already did that.
Of course.
Yeah.
I think there's potential.
No, I would look at it too. Yeah, I would look at it again. I didn't have interest in the first, but.
A lot of this is a software problem, and I feel like it's kind of a very plain looking Android. I don't like the look of it, which is a little problematic because I think Windows 10X, unless it's changing, is going to look a little bit like this too.
It needs a better camera. Mm-hmm. It needs a screen on the front for at least notifications and time.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I think it might. And then, of course, then it needs a lot of software that supports this interesting dual screen thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to throw in the towel.
No, they're probably doing it, I would think, right?
Yeah. There are job postings already saying post-Duo, work is happening and stuff. So, they're doing something. Yeah.
They knew exactly
they're making an Android device. I wish, in some ways, I wouldn't be surprised to see them do more Android devices, right?
Yeah.
But I guess we'll see how things go.
Then will we see refreshes on the core Pro, Pro X, Surface Book, Surface Studio in the coming year? I would guess Pro and Pro X for sure. I don't know about the other two.
I think, aren't we overdue on a new book? I think we might be.
We're way overdue on the Studio. I don't even know what they're doing on Studio right now, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I thought so Paul was going to remember. I thought Paul was saying, aren't I overdue to write a new book? That scared the hell out of me.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm good.
Until you're like, wait, what?
I'm not doing a book until Mary Jo does one with me.
Okay, well,
no,
then you're done.
The memoirs.
So we'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
Surface Studio was supposed to get a componentized design that was inspired by the Surface Hub 2, right?
They're supposed to, have the monitor available standalone.
And a separate Surface display. So
that hasn't happened.
That wouldn't surprise me for next year. We know a Surface Pro 8 is coming, and probably in the early part of the year, and that unfortunately it will be very similar to the 7.
The same.
There was not exactly a Pro X refresh this past year, but there was sort of, right? I think it had a slightly different chip, and they offered a second color something, or a third color. But it's reasonable to expect that Microsoft, Qualcomm will come up, like we've talked about the chipset stuff. So if that happens, if there's a Pro X update, I would think second half of the year.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know about Laptop Go. Maybe there'd be a minor update to that.
Laptop is overdue because of the AMD thing. So AMD this past year came up with a much better chipset. I wouldn't be so Pro and Laptop would make tons of sense for early next year, which is, by the way, they've never announced, I'm saying this, but I want to make sure I'm right. To my knowledge or memory, they never really, right? They never, I'm not 100% sure.
Announced something in the first
but
half.
It's very unusual for them to release a new Pro in the first half of the year. Actually, the original Surface Pro might have come out in January, but it's unusual.
I think it is. And then in terms of 10X devices from Microsoft, I've had people ask me that. I hear no, not in 2021, maybe in 2022. But the first ones, the first 10X devices are supposed to be third party, not Surface branded.
So what does that tell you? What do you get from that?
I think Microsoft wanted to build a dual screen device, the Surface Neo running 10X. And when that got put on the back burner, they weren't ready with something else to run 10X.
Okay, but they have a Surface laptop, right?
They do, yep.
They could offer that with Surface laptop.
They could.
As an option.
For the education market, right? Yeah.
The worry I have is Microsoft not releasing a 10X device suggests to me that maybe they went to PC makers as a way to convince them to adopt this thing. We're not going to compete with you this year. So you have it all to yourself. You know?
Yeah.
It's a little worrying.
Yeah. I mean, I think they get burned on S mode, right? The whole shipping Surface laptop, the original Surface laptop, was it? That came with Windows 10 S mode. I think they get burned on that. I do.
Remember they were going to... Like, within X number of days of opening the box, you could switch to Windows 10, whatever it was, Pro probably.
For free.
Right? And then after that, they were going to charge money. I was like, And then they got rid of it.
And immediately it was like, no, it's always going to be free, which is the right answer.
Yeah, it was such a stupid idea.
Yeah. But, you know, 10 in S mode continues to exist and is still going forward as far as we know. Like, there's no thing that's saying 10X is going to replace 10 in S mode. So for now, Windows 10 in S mode is still a thing. And they still sell devices with it, which is interesting.
Yep. Which is bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then the big screen Surface Hub, the largest one, is coming out, I think they said in January, right?
So this is an interesting case, right?
Yeah.
Last year, not this past year, but last year, 2019, the big controversy in a way with Surface was Surface Hub 2 announced it, build biggest thing in the world. Mm-hmm. It's going to be huge.
Yeah.
Twisting displays and stack them up. And then at, I think it was Ignite, they were like, well, actually, a lot of our customers told us they want the old system and the new screen. So we're going to split it into Hub 2S and... 2X, and the 2S will come out first. It'll just be the same as it was before.
It's kind of disappointing. I really liked the way they were.
Yeah. Well, but then there was the 1-2-3 punch of then there was the pandemic.
Yeah.
And now it's like, people aren't going to be standing in front of a big display working together.
Right.
That's true.
I guess we'll let people run normal Windows 10 on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here we are, and now it's the end of 2020. what does it look like in 2021? Do they Surface Hub 2X never happened, right?
It never happened. Nope.
So does it happen?
And the big screen one never happened of the 2S.
Yeah,
like the 85-inch still hasn't shipped. Or 84.
If you have an extra $22,000 or whatever it is sitting in your pocket, you know, maybe in the form of gift cards to Target and other places, I guess you could collect them together.
Yeah.
Buy a Surface.
Yeah. I mean, there are people who are going back to work. So even at Microsoft, there are people who go back to the office. So there is a case where you could say there need to be some of these giant hubs around.
Right. So, but do we expect that in 2021 Surface Hub 2X, as Microsoft showed it,
I know,
happens? Do we think that's going to
happen? I don't know. They haven't talked about it at all. They've just stopped talking
about
it.
Imagine together mode on a Surface Hub, though.
I know. Right.
Yeah, you could have the screens vertically and one person could be on each screen. And actually, they're big enough. They're almost life-sized.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally could.
If I had a lot of money, they'd be perfect avatars for our round table panels.
Yeah, you could actually, so the way they do game shows now, you could have vertical surface hubs where seats would be.
Yeah.
And they're kind of staggered and it would look like there was an audience.
It'd be really cool.
Right. It would be.
If I had millions, that's what I'd do. Fortunately, I do not.
Right. So if you want to save some money, just buy those department store mannequins and put them there.
You know what? That would be hysterical.
With a little iPad taped to the face.
That would be so hysterical. We turned the camera around and there's just a studio full of mannequins.
I was really lonely this year.
I needed people. I needed an audience.
Hey, Bob, can you keep it down in the back? We're trying to run a show here. It's like, who's Leo talking to? It's weird.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'd make such a good evil genius.
I'm pretty sure this was the plot of a horror movie in the
1970s. Yeah. Yeah. So that's it for Surface predictions, I think.
Now the exciting part.
That's right. The cloud.
The commercial cloud, baby.
Oh, man.
Commercial cloud and real cloud. So there's some things that are easy to predict here, right? Teams continues to grow like hotcakes. That's pretty easy to guess with COVID continuing.
Both in usage and new features.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Surprisingly, I've heard nothing or seen nothing about Microsoft trying to make the introduction of so many new features more manageable. That kind of seems to me like, you know, the way we talk about Windows and kind of scaling back and fixing the design in Teams, I feel like we're also at this point, right?
Yeah. We've like, reached the point where you need management scripts to control what's installed.
I know. Yeah. But anyway, I think there'll be more new Teams features, more capabilities around calling, especially more stuff for first-line workers, because that's a market they're really going after. So first-line workers are people who are in the customer support frontline situations, like frontline workers at hospitals and at restaurants and fast food places and all that retail. So you can expect to see more of that. Azure, more regions, more services, because, you know, over 150 or 200 services, not enough services. You need more. And, you know, if you want to know where Azure is going to add services next, just look at AWS, because it's almost always something that AWS has that they don't have. And every once in a while, AWS will add something Azure has that they don't have. But usually it's the other way around. AI. How can we have a discussion about the future with no AI? Of course there'll be more AI. AI everything. AI all the things, right?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to buy a muscle car with a carburetor and go live in a cabin in the woods.
See?
Get me a sewing machine and a hand-cranked radio.
Right. And a pat.
Living off the land sounds so romantic.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, and then my personal things that were on my watch list here, I already talked about the Meta OS Fluid Framework. I think that's going to be big in 2021, mark my words. And Universal Search is the other one. You know, the idea of having a common search box and search engine that works across all the Microsoft apps and Windows and Edge and OneDrive, everything, right? That all the pieces got laid into place this year for that. But next year is going to be the year Microsoft has to try to show people why that matters and get them to agree to sign in so that they can take advantage of that. Even if they're saying Bing and they want their work items to show up when they do a search, like turn it into an intranet search. I think that is going to be really big for them. Like that'll be the make or break for them next year. Can they show people why universal search is great at work and that they should be willing to sign in to get the advantages of it? Like Chris Kapp, when we talked to him about that on our show, he said yeah, that is a big deal, but we got to convince people why it's a big deal. And I think this coming year will be how you'll see a lot of effort and a lot of cycles put into trying to convince people why universal search is good for them across their devices. That's just my
take. I think it's one of those things people need experience and then they
me too
they get it.
Agree.
You know?
Yep. So yeah, other than that on cloud, you know, it's hard to predict things that are going to be announced in the cloud. I feel like Windows has more leaks than the cloud has. Cloud PC is one leak we've got on in the cloud. And then I also have written about this thing codenamed Fiji, which is an AWS Outpost competitor that I think we'll see in 2021. And that's just the idea of Microsoft takes a rack of servers running Azure and brings it to you and you run it in your own data center or your home or wherever you want to run it. I think that'll be announced in 2021. Hmm. Other than that, it's anyone's guess. Which regions are next? Which services are next? You can bet we'll hear a lot of big numbers on the earnings calls about commercial cloud growing like gangbusters and more commercial cloud, blah, blah, blah. That's not hard to predict.
Well, we let Mary Jo do her thing. Paul, I think it's your turn.
Yep.
Oh, no, I think she should keep going. I think we should make her do this section.
Make me do the gaming one? All right. So the consoles, you know, Microsoft doesn't really care about consoles. They introduced a couple new consoles this year. But you know what the future is?
Turn it off.
Cloud streaming. And you know what cloud streaming runs on? Azure. I'm done.
Mic drop.
Mic
drop.
Do you want to expound on that, Paul?
If I could expand on that, yeah. I will say, I look, and we were looking forward here, right? So I think 2020 was kind of the year that cloud-based, you know, streaming game services kind of started to go mainstream. I think 2021, mm-hmm. they'll really happen. There'll be more of them, of course. I think it's hard for me not to look at this and think that these services slot into the market where the console is right now. It's that weird part of the market. You know, it's not the biggest part of the market. It's not the most lucrative part of the market. But it's this part of the market where, look, it's like I want to play a modern game. I want to turn something on and just go. I don't want to, you know, deal with cards and dip switches and settings and lots of money. And I think cloud gaming, maybe not in 2021, but down the road, I think this is what kills the console. I think this is going to replace the console. Mm-hmm. It's just going to slot right in where the console is. Today. So, you know, we'll see. Amazon service will go mainstream next year. Microsoft will expand their service to more devices. It's unforgivable in a way that it is only available, it being Xbox Game Pass Ultimate Cloud Streaming, or the heck it's called, is only available on Android devices right now. But we know it's coming to Windows PCs. We know it's coming to other, you know, iOS through a web app. It's going to go to smart TVs. It's going to go to everything, you know, just like every other service these days. So it's going to be an interesting year for that. And of course, we're also going to get Halo finally next year. So that will be nice. But I think next year is going to be a good another good year for gaming overall.
That wasn't too painful.
No, I was. Yeah. God, I wasn't even ready with my finger on the button or anything.
I know.
Is there anything else prediction wise you want to talk about?
You know, well, I think it's worth.
I added this late. We've got consumer.
Oh wait, let me do
consumer
stuff too. Yeah. So consumer, I think one thing that people need to keep in the back of their mind is that Credge, Bing, and MSN and advertising at Microsoft are all deeply intertwined, right? So when you saw Microsoft do stuff in the last quarter, like add all those shopping features to Bing, to Credge, there's a reason, right? And the reason is advertising. And it's also has to do with Bing and MSN. So there's actually a single team at Microsoft right now that's called WebXT, which stands for Web Experience Team. And they have all of those domains inside of them. They have Edge, they have Bing, MSN, and search advertising. And they're coming up with strategies to try to use these different products to propel ad revenue at Microsoft. So it's just something to keep in mind when you think about what kinds of features they're going to add to Edge and how they're going to kind of guide Bing, because Bing is not going away. Even though I talked about the universal search, Bing remains Microsoft's web search engine, and they're not doing away with that. In fact, I would guess the antitrust trials are probably kind of getting them a little excited, like, hey, maybe this is going to be good news for Bing.
Right.
Yeah.
That Credge feature, the shopping coupon thing that you were just talking about.
Yep.
I kind of knee-jerk removed that from the browser, but on one computer it kind of came up, and I don't know, was it Amazon? Or I was on some site, and it actually popped up and said, hey, you can save money on this. And I was like, huh. And
I know.
Honestly, I mean, you know, people would install extensions like Honey or whatever. You kind of like see where the deals are. I have to say, I could picture a lot of people finding value in that, you know?
It saved me money twice so far. In shopping over the holiday. And one time it was like $7. One time it was $20. I'm like, okay, there's a coupon I wouldn't have found. Sure. Right?
Lisa lives on Honey.
Yeah, so she might like that in Credge, this new, you know, automatically generating coupons.
Well, she also lives on Chrome, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there's hope for her in the new year with Credge.
Listen, we can save her soul, Leo. Just give us a couple minutes.
I would like to watch that. Good luck. Coupons are very big. You know, that's a huge business right now.
Yeah.
When I saw it running, I'm like, I don't want this. This is just like one more thing. And then when I saw, you saved $20, I'm like, oh, well, you know, it's okay.
How much did Honey sell for? I think it was 400 million. No, 4
was
billion.
It really? 4 billion.
Billion.
Wow.
Four billion?
But PayPal bought it for 4 billion.
Oh, PayPal. Yeah.
So that gives you some idea of the money in Honey.
Yep.
There's some money.
I don't know
if
you saw this, but just as we were starting, Amazon purchased Wondery.
Oh, how much? Just to make me feel really,
million.
Really bad. This is a podcast.
I know,
it was $400 million.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, they were shopping that around, and $400 million was the rumored price. I think Apple turned it down for that much. Spotify said no way, but Amazon, good. Good on Wondery. They have a lot of Hollywood deals and a lot of podcasts turned into TV shows. That was my big mistake. If we had just thought of Windows Weekly as a TV show.
TV show?
Yeah.
Like a serial TV show.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. You guys would have to be married.
I'm sorry.
And you'd have to have a funny neighbor come over.
Yep. I think we would be the neighbors, and
you're the neighbors.
Would be close enough.
Oh, here come Paul and Mary Jo. They're going to talk about Windows again. Yeah, close the door, lock it. Be called Married with Windows. It's a new idea. It's a concept.
Sure,
we're working on it.
My relationship with Windows is one of the unhealthiest relationships that I have.
You see, you want to talk dysfunctional relationships?
Yeah, exactly.
But yep.
Wow.
Cue the audience, you know, canned laughter.
Well, congratulations, Wondery. So they were a Hollywood podcast startup.
It's really high production values and more storytelling type stuff.
Yeah, just one more piece of evidence that what we do is antiquated and old-fashioned.
Nah.
Right. Well,
not so.
I don't have a problem with that.
I don't either. I like what we do. I'm proud of what we do. Yeah. I'm happy with what we do.
Yeah.
Does that conclude the consumer segment?
Pretty much, yeah. We talked about Teams and Skype already.
You talked about Project Reunion when it comes to developers.
Well, actually, so I threw in the dev stuff just at the last minute. It occurred to me next year is going to be kind of a big deal because Project Reunion will happen, right? It will be finalized. .NET 6 will happen late in the year. And then .NET MAUI is the thing I'm kind of most interested in. This is the next generation of Xamarin. And it they've been kind of quiet about it, but they've basically kind of delayed it. It was originally supposed to come out, I think, earlier in the year, this next year, but is now tied to .NET 6, which isn't coming out till November. I think it's very likely it's not going to make November either. But if you, I've struggled to get Xamarin to do anything. I find it to be very buggy and difficult to work with. I have hopes for this. And then there's the whole PWA thing that I think is just worth kind of mentioning because it's still there. There are PWAs out in the world that are fantastic. It's fair to say it hasn't taken over the world, right? But when I think about software development and creating universal apps that run everywhere, I think about JavaScript and the web, frankly, and I still think PWA is the right solution. I'm kind of surprised they haven't gone more mainstream than they have, but I don't remember the timing of this, but sometime in the past 30 days, Google finally announced this thing that we've known for years they were going to do this, but they're going to start putting PWAs in the Play Store, which is what Microsoft is doing with the Microsoft Store. And so one of the interesting things about their partnership, at least on this part of the tech stack, is that they've learned things from each other. And I'm pretty sure that the notion of putting PWAs in the store is something that Google got from Microsoft, you know? And so they work together on these kinds of things. It's still, you know, I don't know. So I'm going to, we were joking earlier about, what was I going to be using? I don't remember, Linux or something. Or
you forgot that fast.
No, I'm not doing that. But I do think sometimes about living like a purely kind of web-based existence, right? And so, you're like, well, I'll use a Chromebook or something. But in some ways, it would be interesting to use a different platform than Windows just because they wouldn't have the safety net, you know, of just, well, I have Photoshop, so I'll just run that. Running something, and it could be Linux. It could even be the Mac, I guess, or a Chromebook. But just to kind of, I think that world has quietly evolved to the point where it meets most needs, you know, for normal, productivity work on a computer.
A year ago, I would have predicted PWAs would be way bigger than they are now. And yeah. I keep wondering if they're even like going to be a thing in 2021.
That's because you were listening to me and Paul.
Right.
Yeah. I like the idea.
Yeah.
No, I like the idea of PWAs, and Microsoft seemed gung-ho about it, but now you never even hear them talk about it, right?
Yeah, why is it not going crazy?
I don't know.
Is it because it's not as good as a native app? Is that really the problem?
Honestly, I think in many cases
it is, though. They have fewer features, right? I mean, some of them have fewer features, right? They don't have all the bells and whistles of the native app.
But we just did that podcast with Steve Gibson, right? This is a guy who writes x86 assembly language, right? So you could make this case like, well, you're never going to be able to write a C program that's as small and fast and to the metal as like an assembly language.
Yeah, but who cares, right?
Right. And I PWAs to me are kind of the same thing. It's like, there'll always be some reason to write native something, right? Maybe it's a game although we're seeing at least two or three of the major.
That's how Stadia and xCloud are getting on iOS.
Exactly. That's how they're being delivered.
Although they're not PWAs exactly. I think they're WebAssem.
No, but we can say PWA/web app. I mean, Stadia, when I play Stadia, let me think about that. Yeah, for the most part, you can do it through a Chromecast directly. I'm not exactly sure how that works, but it's basically Chrome technology. I mean, it's probably one of the bigger web applications in the world right now.
You know, though, when I asked people about Project Latte and why do you want Android apps on Windows, a lot of people said the PWA version doesn't have the feature I need. Like that kept coming up over and over.
Yeah, but that's often not a limitation of web technology so much as it is because Microsoft's version of web apps just for some reason don't have some features, right? And this is actually one big problem that's probably not unique to Microsoft, but we're just more familiar with it, where if you think about Word running on Windows, Mac, web on a PC type device or Chrome OS or whatever, the mobile version that runs on Android or the mobile version that runs on iOS or on iPad OS, you know, there's like this matrix of features and none of them are real supersets of each other. Some of them just do things that the others don't, you know. So on a Chromebook today, if you ran the Android version of Word next to the web version, you would find that each of them has something the other doesn't have. I don't see that as a limitation of the web usually. It's just a limitation of how products have evolved.
Look at Office web apps. Sometimes they have more features than the native apps, right? Like they're the most up-to-date.
Get features more quickly now, right? So if you want to do that, what was that thing they added to Word fairly recently?
The predictions thing.
Translation or what was it? Transcription?
Or was it Word predictions?
Or grammar? Or
no.
There was a Word predictions thing too. Like it'll
The insider versions of desktop now, but regardless of the actual features, like features often show up first on the web because they're just easier to deploy, right? For Microsoft, that makes sense. But that says to me, like, well, why aren't they the best versions? You know,
I know, right?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't have answers for why, but no, I don't know. I feel like the web app space 2 years. Strong.
2 years ago, we were writing so much about PWAs and talking so much about it and hearing so much about it, and then it just stopped.
Yeah. Well, so me and Paul, because we were really
in our defense, I still feel very strongly this is the right approach for truly universal apps, right? So for one thing, leave that there. But from a Microsoft perspective, you got to remember the kind of thing we've been living under for many years, is this angst around the app platform and native apps versus other apps. And we've seen Microsoft kill an Android app project in the past because they were afraid that was going to damage UWP. And I think we're in a space now where Microsoft's like, look, just do whatever you want to do, you know, to developers. You know, we're going to support everything. So there's, it's not just C# and UWP or whatever. There's this incredible range of choices you have as a developer. So I think maybe because the reason we're not seeing like a huge emphasis on PWA is because there isn't a huge emphasis on PWA. There's no emphasis. They're going to let everyone just pick whatever they want and try to support them as good as they can, as well as they can.
I don't know.
I don't care, man. I'm dying on this hill. This is it. You're going to plant the flag.
There's such a long and sad history of cross-platform development tools, web apps. You know, and I just think that a lot of developers had been there, not going to take another flyer on this technology. And that's that. And, you know.
Well, so developers are where they are, right? So maybe you're a .NET guy, you program in C# using whatever Microsoft frameworks. You're like, I don't want to learn JavaScript. I don't want to, you know.
Right.
They're going to stay where they are. And that's fine. On the flip side, I think one of the big mistakes Microsoft made, this is years ago, was when Windows 8 came out, they supported, in addition to C# and XAML and VB and XAML for native apps, they had a JavaScript and HTML and CSS model for developers to make native apps. But they weren't making web apps. They were just using those languages to create apps that ran under Windows. So if you were like a JavaScript guy programming for the web and you saw this, you'd be like, why would I do this? Like, it didn't make any sense. You know, it's too bad that they didn't embrace the web standard stuff earlier, because it's happening whether Microsoft embraces
it's
it
really
or not.
It's really aimed at webs. Somebody like, for instance, us. We've got a website that, and we have behind it a very complete API. So, and we don't have an app. So for us, it would actually be the easiest thing for us to do is to take the existing website and API and make a PWA out of it. We wouldn't have to write a new app. I don't think it would be too complicated to do.
Especially if you wanted to release or reach all of your users, right?
So I'd love to have...
Today, you have to have separate teams for Android and iOS.
I'd love to have a Twit PWA app for iOS, Android, desktop.
But what if you wanted to be on the Mac and Windows, right? Are you seriously going to hire developers just for that? No one's going to do that.
But PWAs would work there too, right?
Right. And that you have one code base, literally.
Yeah. Well, and it's the code base is our website. Because honestly, what we would just say, let's add this capability to our website, and you'd get some subset of our website as an app.
Right, right.
It made a huge amount of sense to me that way.
Right.
And that's, I think, the market.
It still does.
It still does, yeah. And I just have to hurry up and take my classes and learn my JavaScript.
Well, we were joking about 10X earlier and the many use cases that Microsoft supposedly has, right? They've only come up with two major examples of apps that have been specially tailored for this dual screen, right? TikTok and Kindle, right? And that's great. But the problem in the PWA space is kind of similar. It's like, well, what are the big PWA apps? You're like, well, Twitter, Starbucks.
It's not a long
you know
list.
What I mean?
Yeah.
And the truth is actually it is more than that. Like Google Photos, I think, is a PWA now. A lot of the Google stuff is. But I guess I wouldn't get too stuck in the PWA part of it. It's really web apps, right? And so... this is something I'm going to work on in 2020. I'm going to try to just work in the web and see how that goes. If I start turning it like Renfield and Dracula, you'll know why. But I'm going to try it.
Good. Yeah. I mean, to me, it at least seems like a very clear way forward for what we do.
Yeah.
I wish
I
had the skills to do it. I don't. But our developers absolutely would.
JavaScript is an insane language in so many ways.
Yeah, I don't want to do it.
I'm taking this nano degree thing on intermediate JavaScript, and it's like gouge your eyeballs out. How this thing has evolved is crazy. But you know, it's interesting. It's pretty sophisticated.
All right, we don't have any ads to throw in here to separate the front of the book from the back of the book. They're merged. Yeah. And blend it into one giant hole. Mm-hmm. It's another 24 hours of commercial-free Windows, starting with Paul's.
Here at WIN.
W-W-I-N. Tip of the week, Mr.
I like World War II. Yes, so this comes up a lot. People will say, Paul, you make Windows Weekly and everything. That's great, but... what other like tech podcasts could you recommend? You know, and I'm like, well, what are you talking about? there are other tech podcasts, and the truth is, over the years, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and most of them are not tech related. But one of the things that I reevaluated this past year, I don't remember when, sometime in that mess that was the pandemic we're still living through, I kind of started. Getting rid of podcasts I never really listened to because there were a bunch. And then I started thinking, well, you know, there must be podcasts in my sphere that I would be interested in, right? And it is perhaps not coincidental that two of them are hosted or co-hosted by our good friend Richard Campbell, right? And so I don't listen to every episode of his podcast. He does two, Run As Radio, which is the IT... Run As Radio. Why does that sound wrong as I say that? Run As Radio.
No, that's
yeah,
right.
That's,
yeah,
that's it. Right. It's always sounded
the
wrong
IT
to me.
Pro.
Yeah,
it sounded wrong when I said it. The IT is IT Pro focused. And then .NET Rocks with Carl Franklin, which of course is developer focused. And so these podcasts are really interesting to me because I love Richard for one thing. But what I do is I kind of cherry pick the ones to listen to because I'll look, you know, as they come out, I'll go back over the last couple of years and say, oh, like Stephen Rose. Awesome. I love Stephen Rose. I get to listen to people I care about speak to each other during a time when we don't get to visit each other. So I don't get to see these people. And I'll just say, by the way, Mary Jo was on the most recent episode of Run As Radio. It was nice. I listened to you guys at the gym. When I was working out, I come up in passing a couple of times. I will say it is a bizarre truth of my life that I know these people and that's fun. And they're talking about me, which was weird. I hope everyone knows what's going on here because they never said my last name. I'm just Paul. You know, like this is the world we live in, right? And I thought that was really fun. And I thought it was a cool little show you guys did, by the way. I'm shocked you had never been on there before. But it's really neat because in either of those spaces, there are people I know about and care about, like Amanda from the visual studio team on the dev side, or like I said, Stephen Rose or whomever. These are in a year in which we don't get to go see people. It is just a particular joy to me that this exists and I can listen to them, you know? And I know I've heard from people who watch this show or listen to the show who are like, you know, it's neat that this thing just keeps going because this world has been so screwed up this year. Like this is like the one constant, you know, and it's nice. So there are good tech podcasts, obviously. I'm sure there are more than that, than those ones. But for me personally, like that was just kind of a big deal.
Can I make a request?
Yeah.
What audiobooks would you recommend?
Mm-hmm. For tech or non-tech?
No, non-tech. Just what are you listening to right now?
So I listen to a lot of true crime stuff. Since Mindhunter came out on Netflix, I've gone back and revisited the John Douglas stuff. That guy is a genius, and he's got one of the best ones. There's a recent, I think it's either the most recent John Douglas book on audio on Audible or the second most recent, is read by the guy who plays him on the Netflix show. And then at the end, he interviews the guy, and to me, it was like one of the best things I had listened to all year. I'm looking at my list now just to kind of to see. I had purchased a bunch of, or maybe they might have been free. Remember those like 60-minute history things a year or two ago?
Oh, yeah.
I listened to a bunch at the time. I have since listened to the rest. There was one about, for example, the Queen Elizabeth II, who was the subject of The Crown. So it was kind of interesting to get some of the backfill on that. Thanks to a buddy of mine, I have discovered Nelson DeMille, who was an amazing kind of thriller author I never even knew about. So I'm listening to The General's Daughter right now. That's one of his really good books. I went through all the Asimov stuff, mostly on Audible. Honestly, I don't know if I can.
What do you do when you're... you don't have a commute, so what do you do when you're listening to your books? Are you just...
I'm working out.
You're working out. Okay.
Yeah.
You work out a lot.
Or walking. You know, like when I walk in the morning with the dog and my wife, I don't listen to anything then. But when I used to just walk by myself...
Nice.
Or I go to the gym every day. I listen to...
Nice.
Audiobooks and or podcasts, depending on the day.
That's my problem.
I mean, Stephen King.
I just can't get enough time to listen. There's so much I want to listen to.
Yeah, so I feel like, you know, like your commute, Leo, I don't know, is probably very short, right? I'm sure you live pretty close.
Yeah, it's a minute. 7 minutes.
Yeah, so there's not a lot of, like for me to go to the gym is about 5-7 minutes, so I listen a little bit there, but that's not a big deal. I wouldn't listen around the house. I think you kind of have to make time. So I would say if you're not going to like a gym, which maybe is smart these days, you know, just go for a walk. Just break up the day.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good idea. Yeah, I like it.
If you can. Just take 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever. Walk around the block.
Nice. Do you want to do an app pick of the year as well?
Yeah. So I kind of look back over this year, and I'm always happy when I can make like a big change from like a workflow perspective. Not just to do it, but because it's actually better. I had been kind of stuck on Adobe Photoshop for a long time. And by Photoshop, I mean Adobe Photoshop Elements because it's less expensive. And the last couple of versions I bought, and I don't buy every year because they really don't change that much, but I could get them through the store. And that's actually kind of nice because you don't have the licensing issues. You can install it on multiple computers. So for someone like me who reviews a lot of computers, that's actually kind of huge. But Elements is kind of expensive, really. And I was burned by the last one I bought. So it must have been I bet it was 2018. I bought it because it had a very specific feature that I thought was going to make a big deal for me. And honestly, this thing was like 100% identical to the 3-year-old version I was already using. And I had bought it on sale for like $100. And I was like, I'm never doing this again. So I started looking around. And this year, people have probably heard of this. It's something called Affinity Photo.
Oh, it's awesome.
And it's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I use it every single day now. And I have completely replaced Photoshop in my workflow. I do a Christmas card every year that is a kind of a grid of photos. And that was the final test. And, of course, I did that very recently. So I was like, man, if I have to install Photoshop for this, I'm going to kill myself. You know, like, but it did everything I needed it to do. And I was like, great. But I use it every day for the work stuff. You know, it's a lot of cropping, resizing, you know, kind of some auto contrasty type stuff. For what I do, actually, I found it was better because the way the keyboard shortcuts work and everything, I'm actually more efficient in this product. I was lucky because for some reason back in June, it was half price. So I bought it at $25, but it's normally $50. I got to say, it is well worth that price.
And it's in the Windows App Store, right?
Is it? I bought it just directly from...
I think you can get it in the Microsoft store.
The company, whatever the company's name is.
Serif, which is an interesting story because they've been around forever in desktop publishing. They reinvented
themselves and I think
at some point.
Their other major product is a desktop publishing package of some kind. I wish they made a video editor, to be honest.
I'd like
to
see they will.
An Adobe Premiere Pro competitor or whatever. Yeah.
I actually would love to know the story. Maybe if I do some research, I can...
find out. But remember Serif? Right. It was Serif Designer, and it was
back in the day, like back in like the 80s.
Came with like a 3,000 fonts, and it was kind of a low-end kind of desktop publishing thing.
That sounds exactly right.
Yeah, and I think they kind of upgraded. They must have. I don't know what happened. They're probably in Ukraine or somewhere like that. But
probably.
Oh yeah,
I'm telling sure you, this app is great. And for someone like me, because I'm primarily a writer, so I really rely on keyboard shortcuts. I like not to have to take my hand off the keyboard. I can literally, aside from selecting there's probably a keyboard shortcut for this. I do a lot of cropping, but I actually click the tool for that. But from then on. The actual resizing, positioning, exporting, everything happens without my hands leaving the keyboard. I love it. I just love how it works. It's really nice.
People are raving. Oh, they're British.
Mm-hmm. they're raving because they're British?
People are raving about Affinity. Because it came out, you know, where it really started to get some traction is on iOS, on the iPad. It was the first Photoshop quality competitor on the iPad. And that's when people really kind of went crazy. Serif was founded in 1987 by a small team of software engineers, this is from Wikipedia, with the objective of creating lower-end alternatives to existing desktop publishing packages using the Windows platform. The first product was PageStar. I don't know if you remember that.
No, I don't remember.
Then Page Plus. That's the one I remember. For Windows 3.0.
Wow.
And then they do Draw Plus, Photo Plus, Web Plus, and Movie Plus. Oh, wait a minute. In 1996, they were acquired by Visicom, formerly Allegro New Media.
Visicom. The company of the future.
However, ownership
was... Come to Romania and discover the future at Visicom.
They sold it back to Serif Senior Management in 2001. And then nothing for 13 years when the Affinity Designer came out for macOS. I think this is an interesting story. It's a company that just had a renaissance out of nowhere. Okay. I'm very curious.
Yeah, I don't even recall how I found out about it, but it's the type of thing. I think you can try it for free and just look at it so if you're not sure. Yeah. But I honestly, Adobe Photoshop Elements probably normally costs about $130 or something.
Oh, yeah.
It's on sale sometimes for $80.
This has every tool. This has the most elaborate tool belt.
It's everything I need. Like, if you need to straighten something or, you know, like I said, everything. It's all, everything you expect from a Photoshop type thing. It's really good.
I think that at some point they said, look, let's do a $50 Photoshop. And people went, you know, okay.
Yeah, because meanwhile, here's Adobe. And they're like, you know, Adobe Photoshop is really expensive. Why don't we make it really expensive every month?
Yeah.
you know?
Well, like, that's the thing.
They're going in like the opposite direction,
Serif must have seen an opportunity and jumped on it. And good on them because they've succeeded dramatically.
Yeah, I love it. I mean,
good pick.
I just love it.
Yeah. Enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo Foley.
It's still in the news this week, Solora Gate and the attack. So my enterprise pick of the week has to do with resources that Microsoft's making available for people to try to understand what's been going on and their response and what they can do proactively as IT pros. So there's a post that they did December 28th on the Microsoft.com/security blog that's called Using Microsoft 365 Defender to Protect Against Solora Gate. And it's more than just that. There's a lot of resources listed here that might be interesting. Plus the aka.ms/SoloraGate. That's the site you really want. That's part of the Microsoft Security Response Center, and they're updating it daily pretty much with new resources and new places you can go to get more help and assistance and additional resources to understand and be up to date with what's going on with that hack.
Yes. Yesterday, Steve Gibson did a whole bunch of stuff on this and Supernova or whatever it's called. It's a bad situation.
It's really bad. It is. And, you know, people have asked, was Microsoft itself hacked? Basically, the answer is yes. But they say that none of their customers have gotten in trouble because of them actually being infiltrated. So it wasn't passed on to customers, they say.
Yeah.
But it's still something you want to keep tabs on.
Everybody was hacked. They've reverse engineered.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Right?
The Cisco, everybody was compromised by this. And the compromise is ongoing. And it's just kind of a quirk that we even found out about it. It's just terrible.
It's bad.
It's crazy.
Since we hadn't talked about it. Yeah. I know, we hadn't talked about it on Windows Weekly, so I just wanted to throw that page out there, and the center is a resource.
Good pick, and an enterprise pick number two.
Yes. So I think people know there's a way to get Azure for free for 12 months. You get kind of a bare bones type situation if you open up a free account. I mean, I shouldn't call it bare bones because you do get a lot of access to a lot of services. And Microsoft says, you know, it's a way for you to test how you can dabble with some of their AI services or, you know, basically use it in test mode to do prototypes and such. Right now, there's tons of products and services that come for free in a limited way with an Azure free account. Like there's 750 hours of Linux virtual machine time, 750 hours of Windows virtual machine time, those kinds of things. But this week, they also added a bunch of new services for people who have the free account. And I just wanted to bring those up in case anybody cares about these services and has been missing them as part of the free service. So Service Bus, VPN Gateway, Load Balancer, Container Registry, Archive Storage, and more Cosmos DB amounts are now all part of the Azure free account for 12 months.
That's good.
Yeah, if you search Azure free account, you'll get the whole list, and it's rather lengthy, so I won't recite them all here today.
I don't know about you, but I'm excited about a new beer.
I literally just laughed out loud when I saw the name of this.
It's the perfect beer for today. It's of course from the people who have the best beer names, Evil Twin. Evil Twin has a beer called Happy New Beer.
Aww.
Which is a very traditional Russian Imperial Stout. But I'm sure since it's from Evil Twin, it's great. I have not had it yet. 10%, lots of deep roaster's malt, baker's chocolate, dark fruit, coffee notes, traditional like Imperial Stout kind of flavors. But it's really funny. If you go on the Evil Twin Brewing page, just search, do a search on Evil Twin.
Mary Jo.
They have such a great
Mary Jo. The cat is staring at you.
The cat is like literally right in front of the camera.
Murder Mittens.
I know. He's like, she's talking about beer. It's never going to end.
Don't make eye contact. Don't make eye contact.
I'm sorry.
He knows we're at the end of the show. He wants to get fed. No, they have so many good beer names on here right now. Yes.
So where would you go to the beers, our beers section?
Yeah. Click on our beers.
Okay. You can see. And, I'm not coming home for Christmas.
Yeah.
Evil Water Pastry Seltzer. Oh, my gosh.
They have E.T. Stay Home, the whole series of E.T. Stay Home.
Who else is excited about the virtual viewing of the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree this year?
Where are these guys? Where are they from? Are they from Connecticut?
So Evil Twins has a lot of different places they brew, and one of them is in Ridgewood, Queens. This is where this brewery is.
Okay.
So they make a lot of beers in Queens, and they have a beautiful tap room that's still open to the public because a lot of it is outside.
But fortunately, when you're there, you can drink their I always look forward to outdoor dining in my snowsuit beer.
Yes. Wow. And they also have the hard waters now, too, the Evil Waters. So people who like White Claw, this is way better.
I like the waters.
Oh, yeah, nice. They have a lot of different ones made with marshmallow and other things. So. Yeah, I wanted to give them a shout out because they've been like shipping and serving throughout the pandemic, and they had a beer called Happy New Beer, so why not?
Happy New Beer. You're not a real New York brewery until the neighborhood cat decides to move in.
That's their real neighborhood brew cat.
Nice. I love that.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
You guys.
So whenever it opens again, we'll all go to Evil Twin one day.
I can't wait, and it probably is going to be a while.
Yeah, it probably is.
Because the vaccines are slowing down to a trickle.
I know. And they're there. That's a frustrating part. They're there.
20,000 a day when we should be doing 2 million a day is very frustrating.
Not great.
I just want to cry. This is going to go on a while longer, but thank goodness we have you two to come into our homes and taunt us with your beer drinking game playing. So
like a kind of an evil loving Santa Claus character.
Mary Jo Foley's articles are all at ZDNet at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. His book is The Findo's Guide to Wheeled Wheezy.
There you have it. That's exactly what it is.
Yep. The field guide to Windows 10 is available at leanpub.com. Oh, and, of course, we'll be announcing the new sitcom, Married with Windows, soon. Thank you, Paul and Mary Jo. I hope you have a great... Oh, what are you doing for New Year's Eve, Mary Jo? Or anything?
Not a lot. I'm going up on my roof deck to have some celebratory beers with my neighbors, who I'm in a pod with here.
And will there be fireworks or anything in the city? Or
I don't know.
Can you see Times Square from your roof?
No, I can hear it sometimes, but you know, it's a virtual show this year, and nobody's supposed to go there.
So, right. Nobody should have ever gone there.
I agree.
It was always a bad idea.
I cannot agree more. Yeah.
It was always a bad idea.
Yeah. So, not much. Not much.
How about Lower Macungie Township? What's the big window New Year's Eve deal in Lower Macungie Township?
We usually do New Year's Eve at our house. So usually it's a big party. This year it will be slightly more subdued.
We're going to do ham salad, ginger ale, a couple of hands of Uno, and then bang the pots at midnight and go to bed.
And you're done.
Right. And we're done. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I basically, it's mostly me trying to find where Pitbull is on the station this year so I can watch his rock in Miami New Year's Eve or whatever.
It's a Pitbull New Year's Eve, Paul Thurrott.
Oh, man. It's not New Year's without Pitbull, Leo. Mm.
So I hear... we will be back in the new year. Our next show will be January 6th.
So weird.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. 2021. We do the show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can tune in and watch the live stream or listen for everything we do at twit.tv/live. It's really just a behind-the-scenes stream as we do the show. Most people are going to want to get the produced version when it's available, which is just a couple of hours from now. If you subscribe in your favorite podcast client, you don't even have to think about that. It just arrives over the transom, as it were. Or if you forget or miss it, you can get it from twit.tv/WW. There's audio and video there. You can watch our YouTube channel. There's all the episodes are right there. I guess that's really everything there is to be said about it. Have a wonderful new year, everybody. Stay safe. Stay warm. Wear your masks. No kissing at midnight. Have a evil water.
Right. And, unless you're already sleeping in the same bed. I don't want to see the lips out.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. Have a great new year, and we'll see you in 2021. Take care.